The Palestine Report with Hafez Ibrahim Musa.
Hafez, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaykum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Israel opens a new apartheid road.
Yes, well, this one is called Route 4370. It's in the vicinity of Al-Quds, Jerusalem. It was built during the Sharon era and was open for some time, but for the last few years it's been out of service. But this past week it opened up, and it's a route that's problematic on a variety of levels. The first is that it been built partly on land that was stolen from a Palestinian village by the name of Anata. Secondly, and more worryingly, the broader idea of this particular road is that it's part of the Greater Jerusalem plan of the Jerusalem municipality in Israel, which seeks to incorporate large areas of the West Bank into Jerusalem, particularly an area called E1. What this plan will do is, you know, increase the width of Jerusalem, add into major settlement blocks like Ma'ad Adumim, and also allow for more settlements to be built and displacing over 100,000 Palestinians from that particular area. Now, why it is called an apartheid road is very conspicuously there is a huge wall that separates the Palestinian side of this particular road from the Israeli side. So the western side of this particular road is for Palestinians who will be able to use this road to access certain areas of the West Bank, but will have to go around Jerusalem and won't be able to access Jerusalem per se, whereas the eastern side of this particular road will be exclusively for Israeli settlers who will be able to use this particular road to access Jerusalem. So the road is very conspicuous from all the other roads that are already existing in Israel's bouquet of segregation because of this huge wall that, you know, very conspicuously divides the Palestinian side from the Israeli side. But that said, it's just one of a network of segregated roads, and this is very well illustrated in an infographic from Visualizing Palestine, which shows the various means of segregation and how access to roads in Palestine is determined by the color of one's number plate. The white Palestinian number plate, you know, disqualifies you from using 79 kilometers of roads in the West Bank, and a further 155 kilometers of roads in the West Bank are restricted to Palestinians. But that said, this is, again, a sign of Israeli brazenness to very clearly put this road to demarcate Palestinians and Israelis.
Now, Israeli athletes are being shunned in the sports arena. Tell us about that.
It's a bit of a nuance in that these are two prominent cases where it's actually occurring. At the same time, you have, for instance, the stories that we discussed here in the Arab world, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, who are welcoming Israeli athletes. But the two countries that are taking a stand here are Malaysia, firstly, and then Kuwait. As far as Malaysia goes, they are going to be holding a qualifying event for the 2020 Paralympics in their country, particularly for swimmers. This is going to be happening later this year from July the 29th to August the 4th. And swimmers from about 70 countries expected to come to this event and obviously prepare for the Paralympics. Now, Malaysia has stated clearly upfront from this stage already that they are going to deny visas to Israeli swimmers, thus because Malaysia does not have any diplomatic relations with Israel, and on account of this, entry to Malaysia on an Israeli passport is prohibited. But the Malaysian Prime Minister has actually taken it one step further. Mahathir Mohamad has actually challenged the International Paralympic Committee to withdraw Malaysia's right to hold this event if they want to do so. He's not prepared to waive the condition of Israeli athletes to come to Malaysia. The International Paralympic Committee has responded by saying that it's disappointed and it's going to try to work to find a solution so that Israeli swimmers will be able to participate. Notable in this regard is that Malaysia has prevented Israeli athletes to enter its country previously for sailing competitions, for tennis tournaments. And over the course of time, it's been championing the Palestinian cause at international forums. So, you know, this would be seen to be consistent with that, consistent with its own diplomatic position. But people have pointed out that Malaysia seems to be, you know, pressing this issue quite hard and quite loud in this particular instance for one additional reason, and that is the alleged involvement of Mossad last year in the killing of a Palestinian academic who was based in Malaysia and was killed in Malaysia, an academic by the name of Fadi Muhammad al-Battash, was also said to be linked with the Hamas movement. So that's as far as Malaysia stands with regard to Israeli athletes. Then as far as Kuwait goes, Kuwait will be hosting the, Qatar will be hosting the 2022 World Cup. And part of that, Qatar is said to be trying to co-host with some other countries to share the burden. Kuwait is one of those countries that has been shortlisted. But Kuwait has said already that it is going to refuse to host, co-host the 2022 World Cup because of some of the conditions that FIFA puts down. And those would, you know, the conditions from FIFA would be to allow all nationalities to enter the country and allow, you know, athletes from any country to participate if they qualify. And the head of the Kuwait Football Federation saying that because of these conditions, which would implicitly mean that Israelis would be allowed to attend and participate, they qualify, Kuwait has ruled its participation in co-hosting out. One of the MPs stating quite clearly in Kuwait that they will refuse to give up their principles for temporary interest, and it is for this reason that they refuse to normalize with the Zionist entity to host two or more matches of the World Cup, and that the issue of occupied Palestine and the holy places in Jerusalem is not negotiable. Notable in this case of Kuwait is that it's bucking the trend of normalization that seems to be quite prominent currently in the Arab world, fellow Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, etc. And it seems to be taking a stance of speaking for the streak, holding up the normal Arab position with regard to Palestine. And also last year, it called on the United Nations Security Council to institute an international protection force for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
How many Palestinians are there in the world today?
Important when we say that, Omalala, is that Palestinians in the world, we won't usually say that other nations. Very often we talk about, you know, citizens of a particular nation who are housed in their country. But for Palestinians, the question of the world is very important because so many Palestinians have been displaced through the tumultuous history of their nation. So the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics at the end of 2018 published its statistics, which say that there are 13 million Palestinians in the world today. Of that, about 6.5 million are in historical Palestine, about 5 million in the occupied territories, and 1.5 million was Palestinians or former citizens of the State of Israel. But equally significant is that there are 5.85 million Palestinians outside Palestine in the Arab countries, and about 750,000 in foreign countries. I think that's notable because very often the focus when it comes to Palestine is just what's happening inside the territories. But almost half of Palestinians today are actually out of Palestine. So that's one notable point, and the issue of Palestinian refugees still looms large. The other one, the Israelis have an infatuation about this more than the Palestinians. This is the growth rate, or the population growth rate. So Palestinians in 2018 had a 2.5% growth rate. And for those Palestinians within the state of Israel, they had a 2.3% growth rate versus about 1.7% growth rate for Jews in the Israeli state. And that's something that Israel monitors quite closely, because they view, in a racist sense, Palestinian growth as a demographic threat to the continuity of the Israeli state.
And then a Palestinian detainee has to bid farewell to his mother hours after release?
A very painful story. The detainee by the name of political prisoner by the name of Kamal Khatib, he spent 16 years in Israeli prisons. He's from Balata in Nablus in the occupied West Bank. He was released last week, Thursday evening. Many joyous scenes, as one would imagine, when he was released, people throwing him up in the air, and he's making very excited statements. A particular, sentimental part of those celebrations was a flower garland that had been prepared by his mother for him, and which he wore on that particular occasion. Soon after him being released and this reception by the family, he goes to hospital, to a hospital where his mother is. She's still alive, but she's in a state of coma. So after 16 years, he gets to see his mother. He kisses her profusely and speaks to her, although she cannot respond to him. And barely a day later, his mother then passes away. He not getting the ability to speak to her, perhaps a bit of solace that he saw her while she was still alive, but that joy, cut short, and obviously those 16 years of separation weighing down heavily on him, and this just entrenching the pain after a long ordeal.
Tragic indeed. Have a sub as always. Jazakumullah for your time. We'll talk again next week, inshallah.
Barakallahu fiqh. Assalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.